Yeah, dude, the last year has just been nuts.
I know. I was talking to Shane, and I was like, yeah, I've been wanting to talk to Josh forever. And he's like, dude, he's way busy. I'm like, I can imagine.
It's been wild, dude. Shane kept trying to get me on his show, too. And then I showed up to the Georgia State Convention, and he basically just attacked me in the hallway. It was like, hey, we got to set up. We got the whole studio set up here in the hallway, so come sit down with us. So I was like, all right, I'm coming.
That's awesome. I wish I could have gone to that because I'm in Georgia, too.
And Nice. Yeah, it was the first one I went to. For the season, I believe, for my travel, I think it's the first one. I ended up going to like 12 before COVID shut everything down. So I had gone like 12, I guess it was 10 weeks or something. I had been to different conventions, and Georgia was the start of that. And I actually got sick in Georgia, like coming home. And I was living right outside of San Francisco at the time. And so I was flying in and out of San Francisco every weekend, which has, you know, over 5,000 people a day travel between China and San Francisco. And I was very ill. It was like the sickest I had been probably. I got H1N1 in 2009. It almost killed me. I was in the hospital and shit. And then, this was the sickest I had been since I had H1N1. And it was weird sick too. It was like very, very like respiratory, couldn't breathe. Like it was really bad, but it was before we knew COVID was here. Right. And so, you know, I was just like, oh, I'm going to be fine. I like wrapped up in a blanket and just like, I had a terrible fever and I just like laid there and shook and like for like 3 days. And then I had a cough that lasted for God, it must've been 3 weeks or something. And I'm almost positive that I had the COVIDs in January. So
probably me, my wife, and like everybody I worked with, we came down with something not that severe, but it was just like, we just call it the crud.
Yeah.
And I couldn't smell right. Nothing tasted right and all that stuff. And like,
that's a big sign of COVID is the lack of taste and smell. That's what they say. So,
and like her and I both called out of work on the same day, and I haven't called out of work in years.
Yeah.
It just knocked me in the dirt, but yeah. Nothing that severe. I mean, good thing.
My girlfriend and I, and both of her daughters here, because I moved to Iowa. I live in Iowa now.
Oh, okay.
I moved here for my girlfriend. We're having a baby. We have a baby on January 1st. Thank you. She's got two girls. We all got sick in July, like all of us, right? Right after I got back from the Orlando, right? I flew to Orlando, to Florida for the national convention, and I come home and all four of us are just ill.
Man. You're like, we got that shit.
Yeah. And I'm like, great. You know, we're all sick. And I'm like, I bet I brought the Rona home from Orlando, you know, and I was around 1,000 people or whatever, all for like 5 days straight, you know, like if anybody had it, we all were getting it, you know,
right.
But nobody else said they got Corona from the convention. And then, Julia, my girlfriend, we were both really sick. I was still going to work. I'm a critical facilities guy. So like, I have to go to work, right? Like I can't call out of work. And so she one day finally, and she's pregnant, so it's easier for her to get tested. And so finally I was just like, you know, go get tested today. And so she went and got tested and she came back negative, but I'm still extremely skeptical because I believe that, you know, the false negatives on those tests is they said something like it could be up to 40% of the tests are false negatives. So
yeah. And the other 60% are false positives.
Yeah, exactly. half of those are false positives. The other half had the flu, but they called it COVID. And, you know, right. It's just, God, who knows what is what here anymore. So,
oh yeah. Well, and that's the thing. They politicized the hell out of it right from the start. I mean, when they started talking about it, I told my wife, I'm like, watch the periphery and watch what's going on. I'm like, I think it's a real sickness, but watch what they do. It's not going to match up.
Well, COVID's become a cult basically at this point, you know?
Oh yeah. People
want people to die so that they weren't wrong. And it's like, dude, this is ridiculous. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to say, okay, maybe this virus, this disease wasn't nearly as bad as the doom saying that we were told in the beginning, right?
Thank God.
where we heard that 40% of the people that got it were going to die. And we were going to have 2.2 million people dead by this time. And it's like, no, dude, no, that's not what's happening. In fact, what is it? 94% of the people that have passed away from COVID in the United States had a an average of 2.6 other very bad comorbidities, like end-stage heart failure and hardcore diabetes. And, you know, what, 60% of those or 75% of those people were already in nursing homes.
Yeah.
You don't go to a skilled nursing home to go home. I mean, it's a very rare occasion. Over a third of Americans die in nursing homes every year. Mm-hmm. And that's, they go there for end of life care that their families can't give them. I mean, you know, I worked in these places for 10 years. They have hospice care, they have palliative care, they have end of life care in these places, because people are not, they don't go to nursing homes intending to go home. I mean, maybe a small percentage of them, but the vast majority of them are at the end stage of their life already. And so, you know, it's sad that maybe, you know, Susan lost 6 months of her life, that she was maybe would have had halfway in a coma for the next 6 months. But that's the majority of the people that have passed away from this disease. Now, I understand that there's, you know, normal people and stuff. Anyways, we're getting way off the beaten path here. Let's have an interview, man. Let's have a podcast. Let's have fun.
Yeah, cool. Man, that's what the smoke pit is, man. It's I keep having people ask me, it's like, do you talk about barbecue? I'm like, no, I mean, I could, but
man, we could, man. You got good barbecue in Georgia. Yeah.
That's it. And, but all the veterans know exactly what the smoke pit is. So that's what it is. We just, you know, we BS around and, I'm kind of getting my podcast legs back under me. I took about a month and a half off. And,
I've put out one podcast in like the last, since like March. So
you've had something to do though.
I was really
hoping you were going to be the next chair.
You and me and thousands of other people, brother. But, you know, you don't always get what you want, but you know, it's one of those things. A lot of people will get discouraged because I lost and they'll walk away or they won't continue to fight. But you know, I started this journey in 2016, really. Okay. When I ran in 2018, I never expected to win. I never expected to get 200 votes, but I did. You know, I got close to 200 votes. I got a quarter of the delegates to vote for me against a very successful, very popular in the party incumbent chair, you know, in the party, not outside the party. But what I did was I traveled the country. I went to 24 states. I got people involved in the cause. I showed people that a normal blue collar working class guy like myself, who has normal everyday American problems, could go out there and make a difference. And so I never expected to win. You don't campaign unless you think you're going to win, unless you tell yourself you're going to win. But I did it because I knew I could build, I knew I had the chops to get people motivated and inspired to come and be a part of something. And so we saw the fruits of that labor in 2020 when we showed up to the national convention and our voter base had more than doubled, right? Mm-hmm. I barely lost by 100 votes. It was very, very close. You know, truth be told, if all the people on Twitter and Facebook and Parler now and Instagram that had said, hey, we want you to be chair. We want to see a Libertarian Party that stays principled, has a principled chair that's going to go out there and fight against these war hawks, against these the drug war fanatics and all these people. If all those people had come together and went to their state conventions and got together in a voting block of their state conventions and put all their names down for delegates and then showed up in Orlando or online for their state, it wouldn't have even been close. We would have taken 75% of the delegation. We didn't. But now we have another convention coming up in 2022, and we have doubled our efforts between 2018 and 2020. So what can we do in 2022? Now we have an opportunity to build this thing even bigger. Maybe we take 90% of the delegation. And whether I'm running for chair or not, which I've said that I would if nobody else steps up, nobody better than me steps up, I'll run again. I'm not worried about that. I got back on the board anyways. But now we get to continue to build this thing. So, you know, my plea to people on Twitter and in the social media world and people who have gotten involved is don't leave, don't walk away from this thing. We actually have an opportunity to make this party a contender in this country with principles and vision. And whether it's me or not, we're going to get there. And I know we're going to get there because you got a guy like me who will not give up. And there's a thousand other people just like me that are not leaving. And so, I think we really have a good opportunity to walk into the national convention in Reno, by the way, because Reno's awesome. in 2022 and really take this party to new levels. So hopefully people will stay involved and we really could do some great things.
Yeah. It does make it difficult when you've got the official Twitter account of the Libertarian Party. And there seems to be a lot of people in the Libertarian Party that seems like they would be more comfortable if they were came out and said they were progressives
or Democrats or liberals or whatever. Yeah, it's true. You know,
or neocons or, you know.
You know, and it's funny, that portion of the Libertarian Party came in 2016. I mean, they came in with the Gary Johnson bump. You know, they saw Gary and Bill, and a lot of these people were anti-war, but they were hardcore social justice warriors first. Mm-hmm. But they saw that there was some people running who, you know, they did a little pandering. You know, Gary did a little pandering to the social justice people with the bake the cake stuff. And so they saw that, and they saw that that was a good alternative. So some people jumped ship and came over and then just decided to stay. Prior to that, well, I mean, we hadn't really ran a great candidate in several election cycles, because prior to Gary in 2012, we had 2008 with Bob Barr, who was horrible as well, but he was just kind of like the opposite of horrible spectrum. He was like a neoconservative, like Warhawk, you know. But we hadn't run like a really libertarian candidate since 2004, you know, with Badnarik. Mm. And he was extreme. I mean, the guy didn't have a driver's license. He was basically one of those sovereign citizen people. So he was a little over the top, and probably one of the reasons why he didn't do so well. But, you know, people are going to come to the Libertarian Party and find single issues that they agree with. And maybe they don't agree with the entire platform, and that's fine. But we need to, you know, there's thousands, maybe millions of real libertarians in this country that are not a part of the Libertarian Party. And that mm-hmm. was always my goal, was to merge the libertarian movement with the Libertarian Party, right? Because this is our namesake, and this is the national stage that we get to take in politics. We need to make sure that we have people that are in there that are keeping it that libertarian principled party that's going to go out there into the debates or whatever the hell we go to. You know, we're going to show up on podcasts and media and stuff, and we have leadership that's going to exude the principles that the party was founded on. The founders, people like Murray Rothbard, was one of the founders of this party, you know. And so, you know, I just think it's important, and it's, you know, there's always going to be that little bit of contention there. There's always been a fight in the Libertarian Party between the Cato and the Mises Institute, you know, because Murray used to work with them. And so you could do a whole podcast on the drama that came out of that, the split between the Beltway Libertarians and the anarcho-capitalists. But if we just bring all the libertarians in the movement, you know, that little small contention of hardcore, like kind of seemingly leftist social mm-hmm. justice warriors, they're going to be a very small contention in the party, but we're still going to be able to direct the movement of this party. And I know that, you know, right now it seems kind of hard because of the way the Twitter operates, but you got to understand that the chair is in charge of all of social media for the Libertarian Party. And so, mm-hmm. you know, if we get that extra 200 people at the next national convention, maybe there's a chance that a guy like me becomes chair and then offers the social media platform to Michael Malice, you know? And then I've already told people if they show up in Reno in 2022 as national delegates from the state conventions and elect me as chair, I will extend an offer to Michael Malice to become the social media manager for the Libertarian Party. There's no doubt about it. There's no one better for the job.
Instead of like quoting yourself,
yeah, I couldn't believe that today. I mean, like okay, look, Nick Sarwark has become largely irrelevant. I mean, he really dragged his entire legacy through the mud for the last year of his chairmanship. He totally let everyone see who he really was. You know, he was extremely dilatory. He was definitely trying to stop people from doing things he didn't want them to do. He showed up to the national convention and literally turned around and flipped off the delegation and told everyone to eat a dick. I mean, mm-hmm. people got to see his true colors, and it's stuff that I've known about Nick for a long time. I knew he was snaky. I knew he did shady things on that board, you know, and I've been to every time I tried to bring it up, you know, that those Beltway libertarians would come in and start gaslighting anybody on the thread or you know what I mean? And
the same Beltway libertarians that were defending cuties.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, the reason, you know, the reason Cato libertarians, I mean, there are some good people. There are some good people in that contention of libertarians. There's, you know, and there's some good people from Cato. There's some great writers at Cato, but you know, you also got to deal with some horrible people like Adam Bates, who I don't know if you've ever had a run-in with Adam Bates, but the guy is extremely dishonest. He's a very, very nasty person. And he will literally call you a white supremacist and Nazi if you say you believe in property rights. I mean, that's just how this guy is. And so there's a lot of people like that. But we you know, with the Mises Caucus and my chairmanship runs, that we've really built a following that's kind of drowning that out. So you can kind of see that as a death knell, right? It's like their last dying scream. They're going to fight as hard as they can to hold on to their power, because these are essentially, and I think Dave Smith said this, you know, these are people who essentially are big fish in our very small pond, right? Mm-hmm. If they were, they couldn't cut it in the other two parties, because no one would know who the hell they are. They wouldn't accomplish anything. People would laugh at their dumb rhetoric all the time. But in this party, they have the opportunity to be a big voice. And so we continue to build the pond bigger and bigger and bigger until they're such small fish that every time they flail, it doesn't matter to us anymore. And so, you know, that's always been my goal, is to do that. So
case in point, the different factions of the Loser Brigade.
Yeah. I mean, they're eating themselves.
Ass clowns though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's true, you know, and you know, Dave talks about them and the Mises Caucus talks about them and all this stuff, but really none of them understand it the way that I do. You know what I mean? Yeah. None of them have had these people.
Well, they got nasty with you.
Well, yeah, no, none of these people, like these people, you know, they call them names online and stuff, but these people actually went after my family. They've actually dove into my personal life. They've actually gone after my current pregnant girlfriend, my kids, my mother. In 2018, they went after my 75-year-old grandmother right after my grandfather passed away. I mean, these people, like Dave and Tom, and they get a lot from the Loser Brigade, but nobody's gotten it as bad as I have. You know what I mean? Nobody has gotten this crowd of people to go after them as hard as I have, because I was the one actually traveling the country, actually trying to become the chairman and be, you know, oversee the day-to-day processes of the entire Libertarian Party. And so they had to really, really, really fight me. These other guys, they, you know, Dave is great and Tom is great. And I think those are great. You know, I think they do a lot of really good work for the movement. And like I said, there's some people from the Loser Brigade even that I think they do some decent work sometimes. I just wish they'd stop attacking good people all the time, you know, but, you know, they do really good work for the movement, but they haven't inserted themselves into the internal politics of this party. They don't really understand how the board works. And so like, I actually had the opportunity to take that board and become the chairman of that board. And so people really, really, really fought against it. The people who don't like me. And I mean, I've been called everything from a white nationalist. I'm half Israeli, by the way. You know, my dad's side of family's got a bunch of Israeli, and they've called me anti-Semitic and Nazi and woman beater and child neglector. And they've done everything they possibly can to try and stop me. And in fact, I don't know, I might've told this story on Adam Kokesh, but when this all started it was 2017 leading up to 2018, there was another woman running against me and Nick named Alicia Dern, who had run for vice president once, but stepped down. And actually she was the one that endorsed Bill Weld on stage and asked the delegates to vote for Bill Weld. She decided she was going to run for chair. I didn't really know much about Alicia Dern at the time. I thought she seemed like a nice enough lady. And if she had won at that time, I would have been fine with it. It wouldn't have been Nick or whatever. And then, so she had a campaign manager named AFO or Angela Fisher Owens, who everyone knows now is this terrible, lying, conniving human who has gone after my family and just done everything she can to try and ruin my actual life outside of politics. And that they were working together, and they actually came to me in 2017 and they said, "Hey, we want to work together to beat Nick." And I said, "I kind of want to do my own campaign. I'm running a positive campaign here, you know." "Okay, well, we want to start a Me Too movement in the Libertarian Party. We want to start calling out, you know, people who are make sexual advances or anything." And the way they explained it to me, it just sounded like trashing people for things that they may not have even done. And so I was like, no, I'm not going to be a part of that. And then little did I know, several weeks later, they would start that Me Too movement with me. So they, I got a text message from Angela Owens. I was at the Texas State Convention, and I randomly get a text message. Hey, some things coming out about you sexually harassing a woman at the Washington State Convention. And I'm going, what are you talking about? Like, who? And they're like, Tashina Pascal. And I'm like, at this time, I thought I was friends with Tashina and her husband, Joe, who was running for vice chair. And I actually like Joe. I was thinking about endorsing Joe. And I was like, no, that's just not something that happened. And so they go on and on and on. And all of a sudden, all this stuff starts coming out. And she's like, oh, yeah, he was drunk and he was saying this. But it wasn't actually him that said it. It was this other guy. He was standing near him and laughed. And then I was like, but that didn't even happen. And so I texted Tashina. And she and I said, look, I don't know what's going on, but this is bullshit. I never did any of this stuff. What are you talking about? She's like, yeah, I know. I told Angela that you didn't do anything. So I had all these text messages that proved they were lying. And so they went to this publication called the Libertarian Vindicator at the time. And they put out an article about me being this sexual harasser. And so I saved all the text messages and I wrote up my own article as a response and put it out. And it just killed their whole narrative. I mean, completely, to the point of where it was like they issued two public apologies in a publication at that same publication. Right. And ever since that happened, they held this like nasty internal grudge against me, like this personal vendetta, and it never has stopped. I mean, since 2017. So we're like pushing 4 years. This has been going on. You know what I mean? And they picked up some supporters along the way, but for the majority of it, people can just see that they're nasty people, and
yeah,
you know, but that all those people encompass a large portion of the loser brigade. I mean, it's the same people who call the Mises Caucus white nationalists and Nazis and KKK. And it's like, really? The white nationalist caucus that named their caucus after a very well-known Jew. Okay.
That checks out.
Yeah, it checks out. Totally.
Cause that's how me and you kind of met on Twitter. I guess it was last year, and I forget what podcast I had heard you on, and someone was going after you saying some stuff on Twitter, and I asked you, like, what the hell is this guy talking about? And you told me the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, this is bullshit. So then I reached out to the Biting the Bullet guys, and because I'm friends with all the other veterans on Twitter, and I was like, hey, we need to step in for Josh. And so
Biting the Bullet's great. That's another one that asked me several times to come on that I never got to actually make it on, and I need to make it on that one too. And yeah, I did get to make it on the Burning Boots podcast, which was
those guys are a trip, dude.
and I made it on the Fag Cast, so that was fun too. That was a fun one.
Yeah. I think was it Lions of Liberty that I heard you on, maybe?
I was on Lions of Liberty, Dave Smith. I've been on Tom Woods three times now or something. But yeah, it's, you know.
And we just kind of dogpiled that guy.
Yeah, Twitter's a funny place, man. I mean, you know, I've been really open about my own issues, right? Like I was even on my Facebook, I was even pretty open about the fact that I started going to therapy because I thought I wasn't very good at relationships and I needed to fix that. And like, I've been dragged through the family law system, like millions and millions of men and women in America, you know, and I pay $800, almost $900 a month in child support. Yeah. I mean, I do those things. That's true. I have a daughter that I'm pretty estranged from that, you know, was missing in action for 6 years that I had to search for because her mother disappeared and married another man and took off, and I had to look for them in another state. And, you know, so people are constantly use all that stuff against me. Oh, you abandoned your kid. No, I actually didn't. I didn't abandon my kid. I just, now that she's 16 and when we talk, I don't sit there and be like, your mother did this and your mother did that. I just say, hey, baby, I love you. I miss you really bad. I'm, you know, I'm sorry that we had to spend all this time apart. You know what I mean? Like, and I have these chuds on Twitter that know nothing about me, know nothing about my past or my, you know, my issues.
I just don't even know you.
They just don't know anything. They don't know anything, but they, you know,
they hate you because they somebody they like doesn't like you, so they're like,
yeah, or
it's like,
or
it's like the Mean Girls Club.
Yeah, or they saw a post about COVID that they didn't like that I made, or they saw a post that, me protect, you know, saying protect property or just some stupid, and they're like, oh, you know what's gonna make my case for an argument against this is talking about his children. Like, fuck you don't know anything about my situation with my kids outside of what some random other person online said. So you know, it's kind of funny, but at the same time, it's like, it's old, man. Like, you know, I've worked.
Well, think really about how sad ass their lives gotta be.
Oh, it's gotta suck, dude. It's gotta suck so bad. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, my life hasn't been easy, man. You know what I mean? I grew up pretty low income, from a rough place, and I joined the military like a dumbass. And,
me and you both, dude.
Yeah. And Shane too. Right. And, I joined the military like a dumbass, and I thought that'd get me ahead in life, but really all it did was get me married and in some bad situations and, you know, and then,
gave me bad knees and alcoholism.
Yeah. You know, I have the knee problem, and, you know, there was a time where I was a big drinker too, but you know, I'm a normal everyday. I never ran for chair telling everyone that I was this big time hotshot lawyer or this big time hotshot politician. I always told people I was a blue collar working class guy. I worked with my hands. I've been in trade work for a long time. Yeah, I got like a vocational nursing license for my LVN back in like 2014 or something. But I'm not like the rest of those people. And that's one of the reasons why I've done so well here is the fact that I'm just like you. You know what I mean? I'm not like Nick Sarwark. I don't own a car dealership and sell used vehicles. You know,
it's probably a lemon lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably. I went and visited it one time. I got a funny picture of me standing in front of the Sarwark sign that I've never released. Maybe someday, but,
what does it say? $300 a week. Is that what it was?
I just, one of those car lots. It looked like it, man. I can't deny it, but it was a family car lot. So I don't,
yeah.
I don't want to talk too much shit, but
no.
Wasn't doing so well, and that's one of the reasons why he moved to New Hampshire. But I just never ran on a platform of saying that I was this perfect, pristine human who had never done anything wrong or had any problems. And it was like people started attacking me for being like a normal, you know, blue collar, working class, red blooded American. And I'm going, hey man, yeah, I know, that's who I am. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a normal guy, which is odd
coming from the Libertarian Party, you know?
Right. Well, and I always thought it was funny that they used family law. It's like one of the most corrupt, like, law systems in the country. And they used that to attack me and think that they were making some great point. It's like, do you realize, like, why the family law system always screws over one of the parents? It's because they actually get money from that. It's actually, they have incentive to ruin one of the parents' lives, and they criminalize parents constantly. You know, they always bring up the fact that, oh, your license was suspended because you didn't pay child support. Yes, I know. I was in college at the time. I was bartending and I had a full-time day job. Okay. I was spread very thin, right? My full-time day job was bringing in like $947 after taxes every 2 weeks. And my bartending job was bringing in probably another $300 a week. Right. Well, I lost my bartending job. So I went to the court, who was charging me $1,269 a month in child support, right? $1,269 a month in child support. I went to them and I said, look, I lost my night job. I don't have this income anymore. And they said, sorry, you'll have to find a way to make up that lost income. I said, you guys are holding me to a double job standard now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you are telling me I have to work more than 40 hours a week. That can't be legal, you know? And that went on for 2 years. And then, you know, I lost my other job because I could hardly, they were garnishing my pay, $947. They were garnishing half of everything I made. I was trying to live on less than $1,000 a month while I was in college and working full time. It was almost impossible. And I was on the West Coast, right? I was in Oregon. You know, it's almost expensive as California. I was trying to live off $1,000 a month. There was months where I was staying in my car just to try and pay my child support. So I got a little behind on my child support, and then they pulled my driver's license because my son's mother will immediately go down to the enforcement office and say he hasn't paid his child support this month, and they'll pull my driver's license. Does that sound like a legal system that you want to support to hurt somebody? Like,
right. And about those same people will be sitting there saying how licensing is bad.
Right. Well, exactly. And then, in the meantime, I'm showing up for our visits, and she's not even bringing them to our visits. You know, she's completely in contempt of court. The courts won't do anything about it because she's the custodial parent, and I'm getting screwed. And they're also like, hey, we're going to put you in jail if you don't pay your child support. Right. It's like, you're using this corrupt system to try and hurt me. Like, what?
the whole system is, yeah. It's like the whole system is perverse incentives.
Yeah.
You know, just like you're talking about, you know, you lost your job and they're like, too bad. It's like that scene in Goodfellas when they do the partnership in that restaurant. And he's like, the bills, you know, it's a light night. F you, pay me, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly how the government is. And that, especially when it comes to family law stuff, because they get such a huge incentive kickback from the parent that is basically doesn't have custodial custody. Right. And so it's just a horrible system. And it's one that, you know, libertarians should be championing because
just as much as ending the drug war.
Yeah, millions of people in this country are dealing with this right now today. Millions of people. And the Libertarian Party, we have one platform that's like equal parenting or equal shared parenting, but like there's some really cool people Cash Jackson, right, who really champions this cause because he's like has a similar story to me where he just fought to try and be with his kids, and the court has made him basically a criminal and made it very hard for them to be a parent. And so it's a really big issue that the Libertarians should be championing, and they just don't, you know. And in fact, several Libertarians will use that family law system against you to try and hurt you and make your life harder, which I just – I'll never not be able to laugh at them doing that.
Yeah. It's like, oh, some of them are just as big a statist as the people they call you hate.
Thankfully, I got a really good job now. I make plenty of money. I pay the child support I'm supposed to be paying, but you know, my son's mother still not letting me see him. And I have court ordered like parenting time. And I literally have email after email after email of me saying, hey, let me see him. Can I see my son? And nothing, you know what I mean? And so they use that, and then they go out and try and say that I've abandoned my son. And I'm like, no, that's not what's happening. I have a court that's dragged me through the mud and that won't help me. But she just goes out there and plays the victim with these people because she knows that it hurts me. And that's what she's always wanted to use them as a weapon against me. And that's just what's going on. So,
yeah, I got lucky. You know, my parents got divorced when I was a kid, and I was really lucky because there was just, that was the one thing they agreed on, is that the, you know, my sister was like 18 when I was in elementary school. And they were like, never use the kids as a weapon. You know, my mom said, I think even back then it was, you know, not very much. It was just like, just to cover his clothes for school, stuff like that. But then, yeah, I've seen friends that, man, just got put through the damn ringer. And I was like, you know, that's pretty, pretty terrible to use another human being as a weapon against the parent, just because you're pissed off and, you know, don't like them. You know, the kid's got nothing to do with it.
Here's the problem is, you know, she thinks it's hurting me, and it does, you know, in some ways. Well, it really does. Emotionally, it really bums me out that I haven't seen my son. It's horrible. I hate it. You know, I had him for a long time in the beginning, and then all of a sudden I don't get to see him anymore, and that sucks. But ultimately, who you're hurting when you do parental alienation and use a child as a weapon is always going to be the kid. You always hurt the kid far more than either of the parents get hurt. And so, you know, that's where we're at. And some parents are just not going to understand that, but they should. I mean, if you care about your kids, you shouldn't be alienating a parent from your child unless that parent is, you know, a bad person, then it's understandable. Right. You know, sure, if that person, sure, if it's an abuser or something. But I've never been abusive. It's something that they also call me, abuser. I've never been abusive. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not a drug addict. I don't do any of that stuff. I just, you know, I'd love to see my kids, they've just been used as a weapon against me for a long time. And now finally, you know, I have an opportunity with this new child to actually have a family and stuff, which is what I've always wanted, you know? Yeah. And so I'm pretty excited about that. And hopefully, you know, everything stays good there, and I'm trying my hardest to make sure that we all stay together this time.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, there's sometimes people do get a second chance, and that's awesome. So.
Yeah. I'm in love, man.
I'll be praying for you, man.
I appreciate it, man. I'll pray for me too. And I'm so in love, man. I moved 1700 miles away from California to live in the icy frozen tundra of Iowa. So,
yeah, at least that shit ain't on fire, though.
Yeah, true. You know, which, yeah, man, it's scary because I'm from California, born and raised. I'm a Cali boy, but I lived in Oregon for 7 years, and so like all of my friends and family, I got a ton of family that have been evacuated in Oregon, and friends that have lost their whole homes, and it's like, man, it really sucks, you know, seeing these fires. And I've been saying this for years, you know, this progressive deforestation policies on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, there used to be a very robust logging industry on the West Coast, Northern California, where these fires are, and Oregon and Washington. You used to have this really robust, like great logging industry. And in fact, the logging industry really they really are what built the Pacific Northwest. The whole Pacific Northwest was built by the logging industry. And in 1971, they put forward the Responsible Forestry and Logging Act or something in Oregon. And essentially it cut the logging industry by more than 3/4. Mm. And so, you know, whereas one time they had about 100 different logging companies working around the clock, and you know, they were taking out the old dead trees and they were clearing the underbrush. Now they're not doing that anymore. And so for years and years and years, you know, 30 years, we're talking 30 years this has been going on. Now it's a tinderbox. You know, you have dead trees that are all right next to each other. There's pine needles everywhere. Nothing's been cleared. And so one spark and you've got a giant forest fire because there's no way to put out a tinderbox like that. And so,
yeah. And you know, people don't get, that's the thing I hate. I always joke around and say politics is Greek for ruiner of everything. But, but it's these people, and they're making these laws about stuff they have no clue about, like nothing. They just don't know. It's almost like everybody that's running the government are like those people that were too dumb for debate club, but cool enough to be on like the yearbook committee.
Well, the majority of the people who go into politics are rich.
Yeah.
They've never done any blue collar work. They've never been loggers. They've never been construction workers. They've never had to like rent an apartment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe in college for a while, but
that's why Thomas Massey. You see pictures of him. He's out there working on his fox body in a garage attached to a house that he built out of stuff. You know,
yep.
That dude's pretty cool.
We need more blue collar politicians, man. And you know, that was one of the things I hoped to inspire when I got involved, was to show that, like, you know, I don't come from money, man, at all. I had a single mom who raised two kids on three jobs. We lived for a long time. We lived in the hood. I mean, the hood, you know what I mean? And you know, you can really make a difference in politics if you actually get involved. And that's coming from a guy who's largely an anarchist in thought. But I understand that, you know, if a mechanic has four tool drawers and a problem, and he uses three and then looks at the fourth drawer and goes, I'm not going to use that one, then he may or may not get the job done. So I'm a big fan of trying to use every tool I have to try and roll back the size and scope of an intrusive government. And so that's always kind of been my argument for being involved in politics at all. Because I am an anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist or whatever we're calling ourselves these days that doesn't revolve around supporting the Cuties movie.
So. Oh God. Yeah, I think it was Derek from Burning Boots. He's like, I'm just waiting for a pedophobe to be the next insult.
God, yeah. If that time comes, we've let it go on for far too long, and it's time to bust out the what must be done. Well, right, there could be no tolerance towards pedophiles in a libertarian social order. We'll have to channel our inner Hoppe, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know that meme when I sent you that thing yesterday. I said I made a meme. That was a screenshot of the actual cancellation page. And I
nice.
Nice. Pedos get the wood chipper.
Yeah.
Why are you canceling your Netflix account? Pedos get the wood chipper, bitch.
Pedos get the wood chipper. Feet first, please.
Yeah.
Hop up in their feet first, please. Yeah.
You got people like Nick Gillespie and then that one chick from Cato I hate it.
I hate Nick Gillespie. He's such a smarmy little asshole. He's like an old man version of Nick Sarwark.
Yeah. Oh, God. Fucking jackass Fonzie wannabe.
Oh God, he's horrible.
I can't stand it because like I went in because I'm fairly new to libertarianism, and I go back and forth. I'm like, I'm not Republican. I'm not left. I'm like, I don't know if I'm a libertarian. There's a lot of I'm definitely down with the whole Mises Institute thing. I mean, that's what brought me in anyway. But like,
you must be a Nazi.
Must be. I mean, I got a shaved head, so.
Yeah. You got the people always call my haircut the Hitler Youth haircut. Why? I wonder why you chose that Hitler Youth haircut. I'm like, it's a hard part high fade, man. I'm getting old, and I'm starting to get a little bit of parking spots here on the side.
Yeah.
You know, I grow the hair out. It's like the last like bastion of trying to hold on to my hair. And these people are trying to call me a Nazi, and I'm like, what the fuck, man?
It's somebody goes, why'd you shave your head? Are you Nazi now? I'm like, no, I work in a shop with no AC and it was 100 degrees.
Dude, I live in fucking Georgia where it gets 100 and some degrees and it's humid as shit. Why don't you shut up?
Yeah.
Mind your own business.
I've been married forever. I'm 40 and I just don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go. I'm almost 38 and I'm trying to get married. So I get it.
I tell you what, I told my wife, I'm like, it's hot. I think I want to shave my, I totally pulled a Pedro, dude. He's like, I got hot on top of my head. So I shaved it. And she, I told her, I was like, it's hot. I'm just going to shave my head. She goes, get the clippers. I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, from what I understand, women like to rub shaved heads. I can't shave it yet, man. I can't. I'm not really losing it. I just got, it's a little thinner right here.
Yeah, I got it.
But, right in the sides there. But I still got, I think I got 3 gray hairs and I still got a lot of hair. So I'm not shaving it yet. But as soon as it goes like an half an inch or an inch back, I'm shaving it. I'm going full Bruce Willis. Beard and shaved head. There's no doubt.
I hear you. I'm getting gray in my beard.
Yeah, I got some white and gray in my beard a little bit, but not much. But that's your wisdom coming in, man.
Ever since I became a libertarian, I've been sprouting gray hairs all over the place.
Dude, you're telling me I've aged. If you look at a picture of me in 2017 compared to me now, you'll be like, "What the fuck happened to you?" And I'll be like, "Listen, I traveled to 40 states and dealt with libertarians for the last 4 years.
I've been herding cats for
the That's what happened to me. Libertarians do not make life easy for you, especially the ones that don't like you. Man, they don't make it easy.
No, I just don't get it. I mean, you expect it. You expect it from, actually, I don't even expect it. I'm like, dude, what, see, like, I love to bag on Nick. So I was like, I'll see Nick. I'm like, what's this chick's problem? You know?
What did Dave call him? There was something, Dave called him a little chick or a little, I don't know. It was so funny. Dave was on some podcast and called him a smarmy little girl. And I was just like, I fell out of my chair laughing. It was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. But
he's like the main character chick from Bad Girl or Mean Girls. So that's what it is.
Yeah. He just, and he's not any better. He's worse in person than he is online. He's real bad online.
I'll get in conversations the pragmatist or whatever. And man, some of them are just the most condescending people.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, man, I know my knuckles jagged ground, but I've read the same books you have. What have you done? I was like, yeah, I got some little tiny podcast that maybe like 1,000 people listen to, but I'm like, I own property.
Yeah. Well, a lot of
I'm blue collar, but I own my own home, and like all this stuff. I'm like, you guys sit there and talk all this shit, but like, you're not doing nothing.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing about a lot of these people these people online that are constantly attacking, they don't do shit. They don't do anything. The vast majority of them don't do anything for the party. They don't do anything for the movement. They don't work with candidates. They don't do anything. I've worked with 100 candidates over the last 3 years. I travel to 40 states. I've raised money for the party, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for the party and for candidates. I've worked on ballot access. I've literally gone out in Ohio and petitioned for ballot access while I was running for chairman of the national party. I ran the affiliate support committee. It's like, you're talking shit to the guy who literally spends so much of his personal capital and time and spare time to make your party a better party. You're talking shit to that person and you're doing fucking nothing. You haven't done shit. You're not even waving a sign on your corner for the presidential candidate right now. You have no room to talk shit about anybody at all. Sorry. And it's true. They're not doing anything. They don't do fucking nothing at all.
I'm not going to lie. I hadn't done shit for the party either.
That's okay. You got a little podcast. You're doing something,
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to talk about, at least libertarian philosophy. I've been trying to push that.
Sure. There's two wings of the movement. There's the education wing and the political wing. And I just happen to work in both of them. I think it's important to work in both of them. If you have the capacity to do so, do so. If not, then don't. That's fine. But if you have time, look at the candidates. Figure out which candidate's going to let you own your property outright. Look at what candidate's going to let you have whatever firearms you want to have. Look at what candidate's going to end the drug war and stop sending billions of our dollars overseas to fight brown people that we've never met. Mm-hmm. Those are the candidates that you should at least try to support if you get an opportunity. If you don't want to support them, that's fine too. But you should always be like, look, These are the people that are going to do 90% of the things that I believe in politically. Maybe I'll give them my support. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not that hard to do.
I don't know. I was thinking about, me and my wife were talking about if we were even going to vote. And I definitely want to go because I want to at least, you know, there's some stuff local to me that I want to at least put my vote towards or against. And I thought about just writing in a candidate for president.
I mean, it's hey, look, your vote is your vote, man. You know what I mean? That's how it works. And
I was going to write in Jacob Hornberger.
Yeah, I like Jake, man. You know, I think Jake did a disservice to himself at the end of the campaign going after a couple different people. But I love Jake. I think Jake was great. He was my choice. I voted for him on first and second ballot or second ballot. I think I tossed Kokesh a vote in on the first ballot because I wanted to see him go a little bit further. But I'm going to probably vote for Jo Jorgensen. And you know, she has said a thing or two that I don't agree with. But at the end of the day, I know that if Jo was to win or to get into the debates, she's going to talk about ending foreign wars. I know she's going to talk about ending the drug war. I know she's going to talk about the Federal Reserve because I had a personal conversation with her about the Federal Reserve. I know she's going to talk about and do the things that I care about. So that's who I'm going to vote for. I don't think she runs completely counter to my ideals like Bill Weld did or something. She actually holds a lot of my same ideals, and I think it's a step in the right direction, if nothing else. And I feel, you know, I agree with Spike on like 98% of the stuff that Spike says and does, I agree with. So, you know, those are definitely the people that I'm going to vote for, unless somebody else steps up that's better, that's on all 50 ballots. But Joe's on all 50 ballots, you know, and so we had the opportunity to get that 5% and then, you know, take over the direction of the party in 2022. Put in whatever candidate we want in 2024, and then we're in the debates, you know? And so to me, that 5% is really important. You know, we get that 5%, then we get the libertarians in the debates in 2024. And that's, you know, then we get to be the grown up in the room. We get to be the adult on the stage and show the world like, hey, these people have duped you for 100 years. And here's your option to kind of change all this. And so,
right.
I don't know. You know, a lot of this, I think a lot of this communist bullshit that we're dealing with in the country today is really just a product of the two-party system.
Right? It is.
It's the two parties have been in each other's throats for so long and keeping everybody else not included in anything, the debates or anything, that it's just radicalized both sides to a point where, you know, these nice, maybe centrist, moderate, like, liberals have now become so disenfranchised with the two-party system that they're now just hard left, like full-blown Marxist-Leninist, like communists, right? And that's, to me, is a direct result of the two-party system and keeping other options off the ballot. And so, you know,
and that's what they're being taught in school now too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But you gotta understand, these teachers, these superintendents have been a victim of the two-party system for a long time too. You know, prior to them now teaching this communist bullshit in schools to people. And so
both of the two main parties, they're both left of center.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. There's no doubt about it. And that's, you know, it's like the great illusion, right? Is the Republicans and the Democrats are different, very, very different. It's like, how many bombs did Obama drop? How many bombs did Trump drop? How many immigrants were deported? How many people were locked up for nonviolent drug offenses? There's no difference. There really is no difference. They pack the same bullshit ham into every bill, no matter what side of the aisle the bill comes from. And so, you know, that's the great illusion is that these two parties represent two sides, but they don't. They only represent themselves, and that's their trick. It's the greatest trick that the government ever pulled on the people, is making them think that they were two separate parties when they're not. They're just
two wings of the same bird.
Exactly. I mean, one of them message is different than the other, but the bills are always the same. They always find bipartisan support to bomb brown children overseas. They always find bipartisan support to continue to shoot people on the streets for nonviolent drug offenses or lock them in rape cages. They find nonpartisan support to continue to support, printing money out of thin air and devaluing our dollar. And it's like, they're not any different, man. They play different in the media. to dupe you into thinking that you have to choose a side and to keep you fighting each other, because that way they can do whatever bullshit they want to get done.
Right. Yeah. Cause if we're all shitting on each other, we're not looking at them.
Of course not.
And, that's why I really do hate the infighting with libertarians, just because A, you're doing the other two parties' job for them. And if you really think about it, we're usually arguing over a bunch of shit that doesn't make any difference. It's like, well, I'm an ANCAP. Well, I'm a voluntarist. And then like sitting there arguing about what the definitions of those are. It's like, look, that's irrelevant right now.
Yeah, how about we start rolling back some of the $1 trillion spending on the war machine before we fight each other?
Right. It's like it's like when we're on that train about like right before you get to ANCAPistan, you know, then you can talk about jumping off if you want, you know, but like.
Sure. Well, here's the funny thing is the two issues that we always argue about the most, abortion and immigration, right?
Yeah.
They're fucking wedge issues in the Libertarian Party. They're literally formulated to continue to drive a divide between the members of this movement. We have no say when it comes to immigration. We have no say when it comes to abortion. We have one Libertarian in Congress right now, and that's because Justin Amash switched. We don't.
Right. He wasn't even elected as a Libertarian.
Yeah, we don't have any say in those issues right now. We don't have any say. You know, we have to get people elected to positions to have that power. And so constantly arguing about it to the point of where we drive people on both sides away is not accomplishing anything. It's not ever going to accomplish anything. In fact, it's going to continue to drive a wedge between the members of this party and the members of this movement to the point of where we'll never be effectual enough to actually get in positions to make those kind of changes. And so you'll never hear me fighting about those two things. If somebody asks me my views on those things, sometimes I'll say it, but I never sit there and argue back and forth with a pro-lifer. I never sit there and argue back and forth with pro-choicers or people who think we should have Ellis Island style immigration or people who think we should have open borders. You'll never hear me sitting there arguing with those people because I think it's largely a waste of our time and our energy and our resources to continue this constant debate over something we have no power over.
Yeah. Well, that's what, someone was talking to me about, you know, what I thought about immigration. I was like, I don't even want to talk about it until the welfare state's dealt with and the drug wars ended.
Sure. And then, like, you know, and
then we can look at immigration, because those two major things. Oh, and, you know, as far as our, different wars and stuff that we're involved in, because all the war on drugs and then our foreign policy, dramatically affects immigration.
Yeah, it's almost like the fully open borders people have never listened to a single word that Ron Paul said when he talked about blowback. I mean, he created enemies all over this world.
Even the CIA wrote a paper on blowback, admitting that Ron Paul was right.
Of course he was. When has Ron Paul been wrong about anything when he was in Congress?
That's true. But I'll say this, like when I first heard him, I think it was back in 08, and I'm like, F this guy, man. I can't, you know, I was still dealing with some stuff. I'd only been out for a couple of years and I was, you know,
Ron Paul
terms with things. But then I'm like, I'll go back and look. I'm like, man, I love Ron Paul now.
the 2008 was really what made me a libertarian. You know, I got out in 2005. And I started listening to Ron Paul, and it changed my whole life. I was like, you know, he's absolutely right. And I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. I saw exactly what he was talking about. I saw that we're creating these problems that we have around the world. And
yeah, I just didn't want to admit that I had taken part. You know what I mean? Like,
I was
at that time. I was, you know, riding a motorcycle with no helmet on, smoking a cigarette, and, you know, not giving a damn.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I remember, dude. I dealt with it too. And
then Donald Trump made me a libertarian.
Yeah, that'll do it, man. 2016 is what got me really involved with the party. You know, Ron Paul got me involved with the movement. I tried to spread the word of libertarianism as much as I could between 08 and 2016. And then 2016 was where I was like, all right, enough is enough with this two-party bullshit. I'm going to go and work for this party, because I believe that it's small now, but we can make it much bigger. And we've shown that we can. We've damn near doubled the party membership in the last, you know, 3 years. Yeah. And the Mises Caucus has a lot to do with that. I'll tell you right now, people can say whatever they want about the Mises Caucus. The Mises Caucus has grown this party exponentially over the last even year. So
yeah. The other thing is, it was Dave Smith is the one that really, brought me in, just running across his podcast. I'm like, what is this shit? And then, a couple years later, now I got my own podcast.
Yeah, well, you know,
you're talking about libertarianism.
Yeah, you're not a real libertarian unless you got a podcast, right? I think that's how it works. But you know,
I'm a big fan of Lysander Spooner, so I don't know if
libertarian. Yeah, I love Lysander Spooner too, and I actually made this post on my Twitter the other day. You know, everyone's all worried about the post office, and for me, Lysander Spooner made sure that I don't give an absolute any shit about the post office whatsoever. Yeah. you can abolish it tomorrow and I wouldn't even notice the difference. So
that's what they're like, what are you going to do if they abolish the post office? I'm like, I don't know, get my mail on time in a one piece.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Stop getting junk mail. I don't know what anybody's mad about. I think that
would be really good for climate change.
Yeah, you know,
with all the waste and all the paper. Yeah.
And I got friends who are mail people, and hey, look, I feel bad if you lost your job, but I'm sure UPS, DFH,
they'll need them.
They're going to need you because they're going to have to bump up, and they're going to start paying more. You know what I mean? Because they don't have to compete with the government anymore.
Exactly. FedEx pays good too.
Yeah, FedEx don't pay bad at all, man. They got good pensions, and you know, it's one of those things that it's like, you know, people virtue signal about the post office, and the post office is largely inefficient, has been for many, many years, and Lysander Spooner proved that.
Yeah, it hadn't been around that long, and he was like, screw this, and I'll do it cheaper, and he did, and then they shut him down.
Of course they did, because the government hates competition. So don't steal too much, because they'll throw you in jail for it because they don't like competition. Right?
That's what happened with Ross Ulbricht.
Yep.
He didn't even do anything. He just created a new marketplace that cut into their monopoly and they didn't like it.
Yep. So life in prison, life in a federal penitentiary for that. Something he didn't even do. He didn't even do anything wrong. He literally broke no laws.
None. But the agents that got him convicted all went to prison too because of the illegal activity that they did on the site.
Doesn't make any damn sense.
Son of a bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you just think about that? I mean, Silk Road was, sure, there was some bad things that happened there. There's bad things that happen on the streets every day. There's bad things that happen at businesses and through regular email and, you know, and it's just, obviously they were trying to make an example out of Ulbricht, but he should be free. He should have never saw a day in prison. That's another reason. That's just another damn reason I'd be voting for Jo Jorgensen, because she's already promised to pardon Snowden and Ross. So,
yeah,
you know,
that right there, that's enough. Probably get me to change my mind on it. I probably need to get my ass off my shoulders and take another look at it.
Yeah, it's hard for some people. You know, we get all wrapped up in this, oh, well, they said this, they said that. But the truth of the matter is that 90% of the stuff you want to see done from a president, there's one candidate in this country right now that's going to do that, and that's Jo Jorgensen.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth. But it's funny to say that, and I'm holding this pin right here. Can you see that?
Yeah, free Ross. Hashtag free Ross.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I'm not 100% sure I'm even going to vote, but I guess if I did choose to and I voted for her, at least I would know that she's not wanting to kill a bunch of people overseas and not wanting to lock people up. And
she wants to pardon Ross and Snowden. And, she's going to cut taxes. I mean, across the board, it's just, you know, we can get wrapped up in whatever you want to get wrapped up in it. But the fact of the matter is no one's under any illusion that the libertarian presidential candidate is going to win. You know what I mean? But we do have that 5% threshold where it's like, okay, if we hit 5% in this election in 2024, we have the opportunity to actually be on the national stage with the other presidential hopefuls. So it's doing something really well. It's doing something really good for the entire movement. And I think sometimes we get so wrapped up and mad about one thing that we forget. We kind of don't see the forest for the trees, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, there's a bigger picture here and we're going to get wrapped up in this one thing she said. It's not like Bill Weld, where she went out and vouched for Hillary Clinton and then said that she thought it was okay to have some gun legislation. No, she's said straight up, she would abolish the ATF right away. I mean, it's one of the first things she talked about after she won. And so it's, you know, it's.
Well, it's like the DEA and the ATF should be a convenience store.
And absolutely, absolutely, 100%. And if there's a boog boy out there who's not voting for Joe Jorgensen, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing, but she has said she will abolish the ATF. It's good enough for me. My Hawaiian shirts will stay in the closet if that happens.
I won't have to put on my Silkies and Raiders jersey.
Exactly. There you go, man. You know, I can leave my pink bunny slippers in the closet for another year.
Well, cool, man. I do appreciate your time. I just been going on for about an hour. So,
oh, nice, nice. This is one of the easiest podcasts I've been on, man. It was a good time.
Right on, dude. I try to keep it pretty laid back and just have a good conversation. So at least, you know, if somebody learned something cool, if someone's just listening to it and they're like, damn it, see, I'm not the only one that thinks that. I'm not crazy. You know, that's cool too. It's just good to meet people, you know, in this liberty movement and try to build relationships, and, you know, relationships and community is what it's all about.
So. Absolutely, man. We're a small but mighty philosophy that, with the right amount of people behind it, is unstoppable, right? And the whole an idea whose time has come cannot be stopped. I mean, that's where we're at, man. And it's either now or never. You know, a year from now we could be living in a firearm free zone around the entire country. We could be getting thrown in jail for all kinds of bullshit. We could be at war with 20 more countries. I mean, that's the direction we're headed in. And it's time to kind of reverse that course and right the ship. And I just want to continue to grow this movement until we have so many libertarians that the government looks at us and goes, all right, well, we're done. Yeah. You know, so hopefully we get there.
That'd be nice. Well, cool, man. Where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Joshua at Large. So that's at Joshua at Large. You can find me on Facebook, Joshua Smith, Joshua Smith, LNC at Large. You guys can check out my podcast, Break the Cycle JS, Patreon, Break the Cycle JS. I swear we're going to start putting out more podcasts soon. I actually have Phil, the lead singer of All That Remains, has promised to come do a show with me.
Oh, nice.
And I got some other really good guests lined up. And then I put out on Mondays, I try to typically put out the 20-minute solo podcast that's just kind of me ranting about three different subjects. And those will start getting regular again after this week, I think. And obviously, man, if you can, join the National Party, joshsmithlp.com. The more your state, the more people that join the National Party from your state, means the more delegates that state gets to the national convention in 2022. Don't wait this year. Don't wait till 5 months before the national convention. Don't wait till 30 days before the national convention. Do it now. Get involved with your state and local party. If you have the opportunity, go wave signs or go work at a booth at the fair, or show up to your county meetings, which is usually like 10 or 15 people at a bar having a couple drinks talking about libertarian philosophy. They're actually a pretty good time typically. Get known so you can become a delegate and show up to that 2022 convention in Reno or Sparks, Nevada, and take this party to a direction that you want to see it go, you know? So,
yeah.
Well, cool, everybody. That's for everybody. Not just you, man. I'm not here to scold you. I appreciate all libertarians. I said this on my speech at the
National Convention. That Nevada LP needs some help.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's a really good group of Mises people there that are working. They just need more Nevada help. So if you're in Nevada, help the Nevada Mises Party caucus. They need you very bad.
Yeah. Very much so. All right, brother. Well, you take care. I'm glad you're out of California.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too.
I'm not sure. I call myself
a recovering Californian.
You said you're in Iowa?
Yeah, Des Moines, right outside of Des Moines, Iowa. Yeah.
Okay, well, I can't remember exactly where, but I know the Veterans for Voluntarism guys, they're in Iowa, might be around that area. So reach out to them, dude.
Yeah, I'll check them out. I may know some of them. If it's like Chris Oglesby and them guys, I might know some of them. They're good people. So.
Yeah, Jordan and Dane and Jake, they're pretty active. Well, semi-active on Twitter. But, yeah, they got a good podcast too. But, yeah, I think they're somewhere around that area.
Yeah, hook me up with them. I mean, if they're close, I'll definitely see what I can do with them guys too, man. I'll work with any libertarian that wants to roll back the government in any area. I'll work with you.
You'll like them guys, dude. They're good dudes. Good. All right, Brad. Man. All right. Have a good night. Take care.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.